Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 184. My name is John. With every move he makes, another chance he takes. I don't like going to the movies anymore. The amount that I pay for a single ticket today is about the same as the amount of two tickets and snacks for me and Gina back when we first started dating. The whole collective experience argument for going to the movies is bullshit. People have always been at least occasionally rude and annoying, but they've gotten worse over the past quarter century. I mean, now I'm surprised when I don't encounter people talking too loud or fucking around on their phones while the movie's playing. I will only go to a movie if I can get tickets in the very last row so there's no one behind me talking too much or kicking my chair. And I'm paying for streaming services anyway. I can just wait a little while and watch it in the comfort of my own home on a big screen TV, pause it if I need to, and get snacks far less expensive than in the theater. I go to the theater whenever Riff Tracks has one of their broadcast events, but that's different from going to see a movie. I used to love going to superhero movies. I mean, superheroes, that's what I grew up with. That would guarantee my ticket purchase to go to the theater to watch a superhero movie. But I got so sick of the shallow, cookie-cutter plots of Marvel that I bowed out after Endgame. I haven't watched another Marvel movie since. I got sick of the Warner Brothers executives interfering with and homogenizing DC movies. And now that the man rebooting the whole DC thing makes big-name superhero projects the same way Aerosmith made 90s power ballads, I'm seriously considering holding off until Superman hits streaming. I can't believe somebody managed to make me dislike Crypto the Superdog. Yeah, I will probably break down and go see it in the theater because I really want to see Anthony Carrigan as Metamorpho. But as I've mentioned in previous podcasts, that's really the only reason I have left to go see that movie. Now, a general movie, has to be something that really piques my interest before I will even consider it. I want an action story with some depth, not have it be shallow. A hero that is genuinely vulnerable. I want to believe that the hero is actually in danger. And I want a character who isn't fucking annoying. I don't want a wafer-thin plot with a hero that never feels like he or she is going to lose, played by an actor who has to use all his or her good looks and charisma to hide the fact that the movie is a dull replica of a dozen others. And if you do have to use a cookie-cutter plot, at least do something to make the cookie stand out. Don't make the same plain sugar cookie, change the color of the sprinkles, and tell me I'm watching something new, Marvel. Don't bring in one of the bakers from the cookie shop down the street and have them make the exact same goddamn piece of shit cookie, DC. If you are going to keep the same plot, but you want to know how to truly separate it from the others so that each one of your movies actually stands on its own, look no further than the Mission Impossible franchise. I have recently rewatched all but one of the first 7 entries prior to seeing the 8th installment the weekend before last. I caught 1, 2, 3, 4, and 7 on Prime, and 5 on Hulu, in case you're looking for it. I'm sure 6 is somewhere, but I haven't found it to rewatch yet. I highly recommend watching the entire series, and I found watching them within days of each other helped me keep important details and characters in mind. They're all good, and all worth at least one watch. And 8, the last one, is definitely worth paying money to see it in the theaters, especially if you've seen 7, because, you know, it's a two-parter. As you've probably surmised, this podcast will be about the Mission Impossible franchise. I'm going to give brief reviews and opinions on each of them. And obviously, I am going to spoil the hell out of every single one of them. Starting right now with Mission Impossible. I remember the controversy when this movie came out. People were upset because, as this was a movie based on the original television series, Jim Phelps, the main character good guy of the TV show, is seemingly killed early on, and later turns out to be the villain. Having never watched the show myself, that never played into my viewing. So I took the movie as it was on its own, and I liked the twists and turns. Brian De Palma did a fantastic job. I liked how the movie opens up with the seeming murder of the whole team, with only Tom Cruise's Ethan Hunt surviving, and set up by Phelps as the traitor. Hell, I honestly wouldn't have minded if the final movie did the same thing, kind of riffing off the Dark Knight theme of you either die the hero or live long enough to become the villain. I like how they managed to hold off until the very last second to reveal whether or not Phelps's wife was also a traitor. I like how having Ving Rhames on the team makes up for having Jean Reno turn out to be another bad guy, because those are two great actors. Now, of course, the CIA vault break-in is absolutely iconic at this point. It's been spoofed and homaged to so many other places. And the helicopter in the train tunnel climax is the first of many insane, barely plausible, but pulse-pounding moments, and the movie puts the franchise off to a great start. Then we have Mission Impossible 2. This was my least favorite of the franchise, and I think a lot of people agree with me on that. During my rewatch of this series, this was the only movie where I started looking at my phone and stopped paying attention. The getting the thief to help you trope is redone in the 7th movie, where it feels much more organic. I mean, why not tell Ethan up front what he needs to use Naya for? And by the way, what's with all the blatant misogyny? The movie tends to drag things along at times. Now, when we get to the action, it's good, and at some points, very good. I mean, when John Woo's birds don't get in the way, and you ignore some of the silly fighting techniques, but it's still a very good action movie. The rock climbing opening credits is something that my wife and a lot of other people, especially women, still talk about. This is a decent action movie, but it's just not as good as any of the others in the series, as far as I'm concerned. Mission Impossible 3. Wow. This was definitely what was needed for the sequel. We have the the cold opening confusion and the chaos, the gut-wrenching rescue mission failure, the capture and escape of the bad guy, the hero actually dying and being revived. And woven throughout it all is Ethan's desperate attempt to have a normal life with the woman he loves. Philip Seymour Hoffman is probably my favorite villain of the series. He is just bone-chilling in his delivery. While future bad guys will be zealots trying to mold the world into their vision, Owen Davian is just a dealer looking to steal something of value. My only real issue with this one is the final fight scene between Hunt and Davian. It just feels a little underwhelming, compared both to the build-up to the climax and the final fight scene from the previous movie. But that's forgivable when considering the movie as a whole. When I rewatched it, though, I was reminded they never explained what it was the bad guy wanted. Davian wants Hunt to steal the rabbit's foot for him. Everybody wants the rabbit's foot. But we, and Ethan, are never told what it is. I kept wondering why they never explained that. Oh, and Simon Pegg joins the cast, and he automatically makes any movie he's in better. Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol. Ghost Protocol has been my favorite of the bunch since I first saw it. But that might be changing. I love the prison break opening. I love Benji becoming a field agent and his fanboy eagerness to work with Ethan. I love Jeremy Renner's addition to the team, and I kinda wish that he had lasted longer in the series. I love the Burj Khalifa climb. I love the sandstorm chase. I love the wild projection screen tech at the KGB break-in. Once again, the final fight between Ethan and the main antagonist left me a little underwhelmed with the cat-and-mouse chase through the parking deck, but that was okay. I also appreciate the cheesiness of Ethan shouting, "Mission accomplished," and slamming his hand on the button to disarm the nuclear warhead, only for it to not work. And he has to keep trying until the rest of his team gets the plan completed just in time. Sadly, Ving Rhames only has a cameo in this one, but the saddest part of the movie is finding out that Ethan and his wife faked her death and split up so she could go back to leading a normal life. In the previous movie, you thought she maybe would become a mainstay, but at least their paths will cross again. Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation. This might be my new favorite after rewatching the series, or at least putting it equal to Ghost Protocol. Solomon Lane may not have delivered as scary of a monologue as Philip Seymour Hoffman's Owen Davian did, but his plans are impressive. Collect intelligence agents from across the globe who are disenfranchised with their governments and use them to become the New World Order. His plans are so well done, he truly feels like he has the upper hand right up to the very end. It also helps that Rebecca Ferguson joins the cast as Ilsa. From her introduction, she is Ethan's equal, and one of those characters you want staying around. The underwater vault scene is tense. But the motorcycle chase stands out for me, not just for the complexity, but for how Ilsa ends it. And I truly love that the scene where Ethan is hanging off the side of a military cargo plane as it takes off, that scene that was used in the trailer and put on the movie posters, is at the very beginning of the movie. In an era where movies tend to give way too much away in the trailers, it was great to see that subverted. And yeah, that was a tense scene, but the movie takes it to much higher levels. Speaking of, while the climax of the movie was less of a fight and more of a chase between the good guy and the bad guy, the end with Ethan completing the mission and the team surrounding the trapped Solomon was sweet. Oh, Alec Baldwin's in this one too, proving that there's no such thing as a perfect movie. Mission Impossible Fallout. Now, this is the only one I did not rewatch within the past couple of weeks, but I did catch it on TV a few months ago. We've seen Ethan deal with civilians who must become part of his mission. We've seen Ethan bring in agents he's not familiar with who must become part of his mission. We've seen supposed rogue agents who must become part of Ethan's mission. We knew eventually he'd have to be forced by his superiors to team up with an agent he's not familiar with, who turns out to be rogue. I also love the dual meaning. Ethan is after a nuclear device, which, of course, if triggered, will cause fallout. And he must also deal with the fallout of capturing Solomon Lane in the last movie. The stunts are again top-notch. Benji and Luther continue to be great. We even get the bittersweet reunion with Julia. And Alec Baldwin's character is killed off, so they made that course correction, and I'm happy. Also, I think the cargo hook to the face may be the most brutal main antagonist death in the series. Speaking of which, you can talk with me whenever you want about Henry Cavill cocking his fists in the bathroom brawl. That's cool. But let us never, ever speak again of his mustache. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, Part 1, is, of course, the setup for the big finale. In and of itself, it's a great movie. As I mentioned earlier, bringing the thief, Grace, into the mission felt so much more natural than Naya in the second movie. Having Rebecca Ferguson and Hayley Atwell in the same movie may be a little bit too much for my heart, but I will do my best to swoon over them equally. Just like zombies were all the rage as movie villains 20 years ago, I think we'll see a whole slew of AI villains continue to come along in movies in the next few years. I mean, The Matrix was way ahead of the curve, but this movie, The Entity, really feels like something that could happen in our real world very soon. The fighting and the stunts in the movie are excellent, as always. And as much as I love the motorcycle jump off the cliff, crashing through just the right window on a speeding train to save Grace just in time, well, it just feels like the writers gave up on trying to make that scene plausible. Still, a great beginning to a two-parter. And it made me wish that second part would be out sooner than it was. Took, 2 years, I think. Oh, and showing Benji during Kittredge's voiceover about members of the team dying, that had me worried. Shame on you, Christopher McQuarrie, for making me worry about Simon Pegg's character. And then, of course, we have Mission Impossible, Final Reckoning. Now, of course, Gina and I watched Dead Reckoning a few days before, just to make sure that we had the plot fresh in our minds. And man, talk about bringing it all together. That poor CIA analyst that got banished to Alaska in the first movie. The reveal of what the rabbit foot is from the third movie. It truly feels like everything led to this. Okay, let me get a few things out of the way because you know how I like to finish on positive notes. This movie was needlessly long for the sake of pushing every stunt and every crazy scenario to its absolute limit. For example, there's the dive down into Arctic waters to get to the submarine, to get in there and get the Podkova. But entering the wreckage starts a chain reaction that causes the sub to start to roll off the shelf where it is rested and sink deeper down into the ocean. Hunt has to navigate the spinning sub. He gets to the Podkova, but he gets trapped in the torpedo room as he's trying to get out. He can't get out via the torpedo tube without sacrificing his oxygen. So he takes off the oxygen tank. Finally, he gets out of the sub, but he's snagged on the wreckage, and he has to cut off part of his suit in order to avoid being dragged down with the rest of the ship. So he gets out of all that, he swims up, he loses consciousness seconds before getting to the ice, floats up to the top, but is dramatically rescued at the last second. Now, don't get me wrong. It was tense. I was holding my breath. My heart rate went up during that scene. And I'm pretty sure I will have a recurring dream of Haley Atwell kissing me underwater, just like Ethan Hunt dreamt it in the movie. But god damn it, that scene took forever. I mean, did you guys tell the scriptwriters to apply Murphy's Law to every goddamn scene? Anyway, did they really need to make Jasper Briggs Jim Phelps' son? I know, it ties back to the first movie where Phelps broke bad and died in a battle with Ethan, but was another twist like that absolutely necessary? Okay, yeah, it adds to the nuance of why Briggs was so hell-bent on bringing Ethan in, but a good agent would have that dedication anyway. Were we supposed to wonder whether Briggs would try to get revenge for his father? I wasn't even thinking of that because there was already enough going on. Now, it's bad enough that they killed off Ilsa in the first part, but Luther sacrifices himself to save London. You knew somebody important was going to die, and I think that it could easily have been Ethan, with Grace becoming the new lead IMF agent. But no matter who they picked, it was going to be someone that the fans were emotionally invested in. So I'm sorry that they chose Luther. That being said, how in the hell is Kittredge still alive? What a douchebag. And again, I was sad that they killed off Rebecca Ferguson's character in part one, but they kind of made up for it by adding Hannah Waddingham to the cast in this one. That woman can have her way with me anytime, anywhere. The return of William Donlow, playing, you know, the poor schlep who got banished to Alaska in the very first movie. That was probably my favorite part. Because in the first movie, when they say, send that guy to Alaska, you kind of wonder if they're joking. or if that was just like a metaphor for, you know, putting him in a shitty job. No, they literally shipped him off to Alaska. And I may have been the only one in the theater to instantly recognize him when he appeared on the screen, because I was chuckling and everybody around me was wondering what the hell I was laughing about. And I loved that his wife seemed even more unflappable than Ethan with all the craziness and the danger going on around them. As a child of the 80s, the whole plot of the AI starting a nuclear holocaust while it takes refuge in a bunker is chilling. Now, for those of you not old enough, I remember the rhetoric from both sides of the American political aisle back in the day, as well as the saber rattling from the Soviet Union. Just like today, with riots and pandemics, terrorism and manufactured hatred, they want us scared. And as a child, I was very scared of nuclear war. And watching the movie as the entity meticulously takes over each country's missiles, that brought back some of those old memories. In the first three movies of the series, you don't really know how much time is left before the bad guy wins. You just know that the good guys succeeded in time. The next three, well, there's a few seconds remaining. This story comes down to Grace completing her task in a split second, like that. They pushed the stakes and the tension to the very edge, and somehow they managed to pull it off. I like that Gabriel was basically abandoned by the entity when he failed to retrieve the key at the end of part one. I do like that he goes from disciple to apostate, seeking to control the entity just like everybody else. And the final chase, the final battle between Gabriel and Ethan is very much Mission Impossible. Using World War II era biplanes, leaping from one plane to another, hanging off wings, and Gabriel meets a very fitting end. I just wish that they had actually given us the full story of what happened with Marie that pushed Ethan to join the IMF. Simon Pegg is awesome. I mean, I could just leave that as a standalone sentence, not even in the context of Mission Impossible, and it would still be accurate. Simon Pegg is awesome. He's probably the only actor out there who you can get me to see a movie just by telling me that he's in it. And as much as I hated to see Ving Rhames' Luther killed off, I'm glad that Simon Pegg's Benji made it out alive. I genuinely thought Paris, Gabriel's henchwoman from the first movie, was killed in part one. I thought she was dead. But I'm glad that she survived, and that she joined the team along with Degas. I mean, you think about it. Ethan, Grace, Benji, Paris, and Degas, that'd make for one hell of a team. And that's really the last question, isn't it? Is there going to be another need for the team? Is Final Reckoning the final Mission Impossible? Well, word was circulating that both Christopher McQuarrie, the director of the past few movies, and Tom Cruise said that they were open to continuing the series. And Cruise said recently that he took inspiration from Harrison Ford's recent Indiana Jones movies, and he wanted to keep making Mission Impossible movies into his 80s if he could. So fans like me were thinking, well, hey, maybe in a couple of years we'll have Mission Impossible 9. The Reborn Reckoning, I don't know. Then Cruise said at the New York premiere just last month that this would be his last, stating, quote, "It's not called final for nothing," end quote. Then again, who would have thought a second Top Gun movie would have been made? There doesn't need to be another Mission Impossible, because Final Reckoning gave it a proper send-off. But just in case, go ahead and pencil me in for a movie ticket for Mission Impossible 9. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.